Mississippi is breaking new ground for business at a historic pace. Amazon, XAI, Toyota, Milwaukee Tool, and GE Aerospace have all tapped into our deep talent pool, prime geographic location, and welcoming communities. This is bigger than megasites. Mississippi offers a thriving business ecosystem with affordability, greater collaboration with energy partners, and record-breaking speed to market. Looking to expand? Break new ground at mississippi.org.
Out here, if you're doing nothing, you're doing everything right. Though on a cruise with Norwegian, even if you're doing nothing, you're still basking in the warm sun, enjoying the peaceful ocean waves. You're breathing. Don't forget about breathing. Definitely need to be breathing. So you get to do nothing or everything, but you still need to be breathing. It's like really important.
Experience the difference with cruises to Alaska, the Caribbean, and Europe. Norwegian Cruise Line. It's different out here. Visit ncl.com, call your travel advisor, or 1-888-NCL-CRUISE. Norwegian Cruise Line ships registry with Bahamas and USA.
Hello, everybody. Good morning and welcome to the United Stands. I'm Mark Goldbridge and this is your latest Manchester United news and transfer news. Compelling show this morning. A new plan for Manchester United. A list that includes players that might excite you and might terrify you. Look, I think it's a bit of a mixed bag, to be honest. Some people are... Look, essentially, we're talking Tchouaméni, we're talking Tonali, we're talking Belaba, we're talking Scott, we're talking Ederson, we're talking building a midfield around Mainoo. Mainoo starts every game and somebody comes in next to him and two people come to the bench. This has caused some debate in the fan base because people are saying, well, at the end of the day, if Mainoo is going to start every single game, what quality are second and third midfielder going to be if they're not coming in to dislodge or compete with him? Which I think, you know, but do we not want to build a team around Mainoo? So I'm sort of confused by the negativity around that. Look, the article we're talking about predominantly this morning is the one in The Athletic, which is which states that United are very much going data-driven on their midfield rebuild involving people who are going to replace Casemiro, etc. So basically, Man United's potential midfield targets are reported as follows. Tchouaméni, Anderson, Fernandes, Belaba, Ederson, Scott, Wharton, Tonali, Tyler Adams, Hayden Hackney and Shea Charles at Southampton. It's a mixed bag. Like, you know, I could say, well, we get Tchouaméni, Anderson and Tonali and everybody would be very excited about that. I could also say we end up with Hayden Hackney, Tyler Adams and Alex Scott or Ederson. And people would say, I'm not particularly happy about that. So I think that ultimately what we're looking at, and we have got a bit of background noise at the moment. I apologise for that. But at least there is some noise going on in my stream. And there clearly isn't any going on with Man United in the transfer window at the moment. So we'll delve into that. You've also got, interestingly, we're not expecting Michael Carrick to be announced today either. So a week on, we're not expecting Michael Carrick to be announced as the new man. He will be Man United manager, but there's not expected to be an official announcement of Michael Carrick today either. So look, let's delve into it. Quite a few bits to get into. Where are Manchester United going to end up? We don't know. I think it's interesting to say, you know, who they could go for. But we were talking about Elliot Anderson last night, and I think that that is... you know, still something that I hold out for. Are they doing that on purpose, Mark? Yeah. I maybe should have done it outside today. I'm starting to think it's. Maybe I should have done it outside today. We'll see how it goes. But you can't drill like that forever. Most people could only drill like that for a couple of minutes. Anderson, still a Scott. Rate it out of 10, says Diggy. Yeah, I would say that, I'm not rating midfields out of 10. It's a news show, pal. We'll talk about some news. I can't go outside at the moment because I've, it's not Gary Neville's new bedroom either. I'm not going to rate out midfielders at the moment because it's a news show and we've got quite a few bits to go into. But basically, what this article in The Athletic is saying is that Manchester United have gone very data-driven. So I think the best thing I can do is probably just sort of break that article down, understanding what Manchester United want to do. So starting with the difficulty is, and I think the reason some people are negative this morning, is that they don't like that Mainoo's going to start every game and we're building the midfield around Mainoo. Because we'll only buy one decent midfielder and the other two midfielders will potentially just be bench players. I sort of understand that, but we have to see what the proof in the pudding is. If we buy, let's say, Belaiba to play with Mainoo, and then we buy Tyler Adams and Hayden Hackney, that's just shit midfield, if we're being completely honest. You know, that's not going to be sufficient to where Manchester United want to be. If we buy Tchouaméni to play with Mainoo, and then the bench players are Ederson and Scott, then that's not bad, is it? Because I think Ederson and Scott can compete with Tchouaméni and Mainoo. So I'm not too bothered about the article saying that, you know, Carrick wants to build the midfield around Mainoo, and he would be the starter with the new signing and then two bench players. Yeah, Michael Carrick's got every right to decide what he wants to do as the manager. And a lot of us do agree that, you know, Mainoo is the player to build the midfield around. But you do want competition for places. There is injury. There is loss of form. There is a lot of games. So I'm not too worried about that. What I am worried about is just where we're going to land in relation to that number one midfielder. So when we talk about, and look, this is what it said in the article, the resurgence of Mainoo in the heart of Man United's midfield means that any new signing will be playing alongside him with a profile that will dovetail with his existing role in Carrick's 4-2-3-1 system. So, you know, maybe we're not going to see a massive change of system. But the main midfielders that we're looking at, Fernandes, we'll talk about in a moment. But look, some of this stuff just sort of caught my eye. As, you know, data without the eye test. The Belaiba update I found fascinating because it talks about Belaiba being press resistant. And I'm like, who's doing the data at Man United if you think Belaiba's press resistant? How can you be press resistant when you have one of the lowest pass completion rates in the Premier League? You know, he's averaging like 30 passes a game when Mainoo and Scott and Tyler Adams and everybody else are doing 40 to 50 passes per game. How can you be press resistant when you don't have the fucking ball? So sometimes the information that they put out will be spin, because factually I know that Belaiba is not press resistant because he's never on the ball. But, you know, we're hearing that United like Belaiba because he's press resistant. He's not press resistant at all. That's not how he's played at all. But look, what it does say to start on the main targets are that Elliot Anderson ticks all the boxes for Manchester United. It even says it in this Athletic article this morning. Elliot Anderson does tick the boxes of what Manchester United are looking for. The issue with Elliot Anderson is the price, and Manchester United are unlikely to want to pay what Manchester City will pay. Man City are considered the clear front runners for Anderson's signature, with a fee in excess of 100 million anticipated, and Manchester United are unlikely to bid that high. They have a strong negotiating position, Forrest, with Anderson under contract till 2029. So look, this to me, I don't want to dwell on Anderson because there's good updates on Tchouaméni and on Tonali, but it feels like, I don't know what you call it, when you're a United fan that wants Elliot Anderson and your club, through what's been a very roller coaster season, has consistently said Elliot Anderson is the player that we want. From September to May, Elliot Anderson is the player that we want. And then we get to the time where we can go and sign him, and Man City are vulnerable because they don't have Pep anymore, and we're going, yeah, we're not going to bid. That's the message I'm getting. It's, you know, call it for what it is. We want Elliot Anderson. We want Elliot Anderson. He's our number one target. He's just played really good at Old Trafford. Yeah, we're not actually going to bid. We're not actually going to bid. Because that's the truth of it, isn't it? You know, unlikely to pay £100 million for him. Well, we're not going to bid then, are we? There is no, we don't want to pay what Man City's paying. Everybody applauses. You don't want to bid. You don't want to bid for the player that you've told everybody is your number one target. What message are you sending out? You have put it out there every month since September that you want Elliot Anderson, and now the opportunity's there. You're not going to take it. You know, we're Jay from In Between Us, aren't we? Full of shit, basically. Oh, I went on to Caravan Club and I was doing everybody. Yeah, you go to Caravan Club, there's nothing there. It's just all noise. I'm going to, you know, Jay Wilcox. Not Jason Wilcox, Jay Wilcox. Fucking full of shit. I mean, and it needs calling out. You cannot sit there after all the bad results we've had this season going, yeah, but we're going for Elliot Anderson. Elliot Anderson's what we want. He's perfect for Man United. And then when the opportunity's there going, yeah, we're not bidding. Why aren't you bidding? Well, we think he's too expensive. Well, we don't think he's too expensive. We think £100 million is the going rate for a midfielder in the Premier League right now. And he's an England international. Yeah, well, we think he's too expensive. Well, I'm sorry. Nobody agrees with you. Another evidence strand of your total and utter incompetence. You give it the big Billy Bug big bollocks all season talking about signing a player, and then when it comes down to it, you choke. It's like remember being at school and you'd have the person who was like, you know, I'm one of the toughest people in the school. Oh, I can beat anybody up. And then someone calls them out and they don't turn up at playground for a fight because they're cowards. That's what I feel about United. Oh, yeah, yeah, we want Elliot Anderson. Yeah, we don't really want him. So, you know, you've got to back it up. And United, for me, aren't backing it up with Elliot Anderson. And the more I read, the more I feel that you can agree with the club, by the way, but I don't. And I think a lot of people are with me on this. I don't agree with flirting with a player publicly for 9 months and then never even trying to sign them, just going, we can't actually afford it. I think that makes you look useless, to be honest with you. But look, so moving away from Elliot Anderson, it does talk about Tchouaméni. And this is where we'll go through all the updates in this Athletic article, because they've given the shortlist of Man United midfielders. So Elliot Anderson, too expensive, probably won't even bid. Tchouaméni, really like the profile of Tchouaméni. Would love Tchouaméni to sign for Manchester United, but unlikely that Real Madrid will want to sell him, and unlikely that he wants to leave Real Madrid and hasn't asked to leave Real Madrid. So what do we got? You know, what do we got? Yeah, it's like being single, looking to mingle, and seeing a happily married woman and going, yeah, I fancy a bit of that. And them going, I politely decline. I'm in a happy relationship where I'm satisfied financially and everywhere else. And I do not want a divorce. I certainly do not want an affair. And that's sort of what it feels like with Tchouaméni. We're all going, yeah, this would be great. This would be absolutely great. But it feels like Real Madrid don't want him to go and he doesn't want to go. So, you know, Anderson, we're not going to bid for. He's too expensive. Tchouaméni is a pipe dream, which takes us on to Tonali. Now, the update on Tonali, if I can just find it for you, because there are updates on Edison, Scott and Baleba that we have to go through as well. In relation to Tonali, here it is. What did they say about Tonali? Here we go. That's Wharton. Tonali is an all-action player, able to snuff out opposition counter-attacks whilst also being the catalyst for his own side to get on the front foot. The temperature from Old Trafford has been cooler on Tonali in recent weeks, however. So basically, this article in The Athletic is very data-driven about who would work well at Man United. And it basically says, quite rightly, he's very good at snuffing out counter-attacks, he's very good on the ball, he's an all-action midfielder, he's up and down, he has match-winning traits, he's got a powerful long shot, he drives through the heart of the opposition. Essentially, he's 26. He was looking to move to Arsenal in January. He's an international. You know, I think Tonali, for me, is tick, 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 tick. Tick, 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 tick. I think Tonali ticks absolutely every box. But more importantly, and I do agree with this, the temperature around Tonali from Manchester United has been cold for about 6 weeks. We killed it in the March international break. The first week of the March international break, it was Tonali, Tonali, Tonali. And United killed it within a few days with stories of concerns around price and gambling habits in the past. So I don't feel like Tonali's even, you know, likely at the moment. So, you know, you read through this article and everything else and you sort of like go, well, we're not going to bid for Anderson because he's too expensive. We're not going to get Tchouaméni because he doesn't want to leave Real Madrid. And we're not even looking at Tonali anymore. And you sort of like go, shit. What is this midfield rebuild? And then you go to the Baleba update, which has the you know, the data with it. And look, the Baleba update is hilarious as it is inaccurate. So if United were looking towards a dedicated protective defensive midfielder, you can understand why they inquired about Brighton and Hove Albion's Carlos Baleba. I mean, look, I don't mind United signing Baleba as the second midfielder for £50 million. But as the Casemiro replacement, it absolutely terrifies me, right? He is not a dedicated protective defensive midfielder. He hasn't played well all season. Most of the games that Brighton win involve him being on the bench. And he is definitely not a defensive midfielder because he cannot, he doesn't tackle as much as some of the other opportunities that are out there. And he's hardly on the ball. Like, he's averaging nearly 30 passes a game when most average midfielders are averaging 45. He's not on the ball. He doesn't carry the ball. His tackling stats aren't particularly brilliant. So how the hell is he a protective defensive midfielder? Does the person writing this article actually know what a protective defensive midfielder is? A protective defensive midfielder is a Busquets. It's a Rodri. It's a Carrick. It's somebody who shields the back four with positional sense and takes the ball and conducts the game. That's a protective defensive midfielder. But look, it goes on to say he's combative. He's press resistant. And he's integral to any side's build-up. How the fuck is he press resistant and integral to Brighton's build-up with 30 passes per game? You know Rodri can do about 80. You know Elliot Anderson's doing north of 50. How can you be press resistant and integral to your side's build-up when you're not on the ball and he doesn't pass forward? Madness. I just don't know who statistically analysed this. And whilst he has not stood out quite in the same way for Brighton in the current campaign as he did last year, few players can keep up with his energy and wiry frame when he gets into his stride. And he's also started playing well in the last few games. Yeah, Brighton have lost two of the last three with him in the midfield. But look, are we just being sold a belabor story now? My biggest concern is I didn't really want Michael Carrick to get the job. I wanted Luis Enrique or Tuchel or someone with experience, but we got Carrick. I'm terrified that we're going to replicate that same thing again, where I do not want Belabor to replace Casemiro as our star summer signing. I want Tchouaméni. I want Anderson. I want Tonali. I want Bruno Guimaraes. I'm terrified that Belabor is going to be the Casemiro replacement signing. That's the signing that United are going to push, because if that's what we're going to do, it's absolutely terrifying, if I'm being honest. Byron says, Mark and his daily propaganda. Okay, let's get rid of you. Mark, mate, just very quickly, just in case there are any other thick people out there like Byron. How the hell can the United Stand news show be propaganda when I'm reading stuff out to you from news outlets like The Athletic, like The Daily Mail, like Fabrizio Romano, like David Ornstein? How the hell can it be propaganda when you can go and read it yourself in The Athletic this morning? It's not even an opinion piece. It's an article that we are reacting to from the news, mate. So, yeah, so apologies for losing 30 seconds of the show there, but there are still, after 10 years, distinctive morons who think that our stories are made up. Which is why we tell you where the outlet is and we read it out from the outlet. So yeah, summary, Tchouaméni, Tonali, Anderson, not looking very good according to that article. Belabor looking good and completely and utterly misprofiled to make him sound like he's the next Kante or the next Rodri when he really, really isn't. I mean, look, My concern on Sunday is that Belabor starts for Brighton, is man of the match, and 99% of our fan base, because they actually do this all the time, will see 90 minutes of a good Belabor performance and decide that he is now the best midfielder for Manchester United. That's the scary thing. Rory C says, do you think Belabor's any different to Ugarte? Can tackle, but that's about it. We want to buy one and sell the other. I mean, I don't know whether I'd go that far, Rory. I don't know whether I'd go that far, if I'm being honest with you. But if you're being completely fair, the best way for me to do that, and I'm willing to do it later in the show, is I will compare Belabor against Ugarte stats this season. Let me do it. I can just do it here, actually. There are updates I want to give you around Scott and... Actually, this is going to be really quick for me to do. So we've got Ugarte here, and then we've got Belabor here. I mean, I've never heard anybody actually compare those two players before, but let me just do it for current season, relevant on position. So passes per 90. Oh my God, this is terrifying. Mate, you deserve a bloody medal. So Ugarte compared to Belabor this season. Now remember, the Athletic article defines Belabor as press resistant, a competent defensive midfielder somebody that conducts Brighton's play, okay? Passes per 90 this season for Belaba, 35. Passes per 90 for Ugarte, 47. Defensive duels per 90 for Belaba, 6.8. Defensive duels per 90, Ugarte, 9.2. Defensive duels won, Belaba, 60%. Defensive duels won, 62%, Ugarte. Recoveries per 90, 9.5 Belaba, 11.9 Ugarte. Opponent half recoveries per 90, 4.5 Belaba, 4.9 Ugarte.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Let's have a look at forward passing. Forward passes per 90, Ugarte 9. Belaba 9, Ugarte 13.2. Accurate forward passes per 90, 65% Belaba, 73% Ugarte. Back passes per 90, 8.1 Belaba, 7.8 Ugarte. And overall passes accuracy, 85% Belaba, 87% Ugarte. I mean, bloody hell, Ugarte beats him in every single stat. And the eye test to me, I would say Belaba's a better player. But then again, Belaba has been bad this season. I mean, Ugarte's been shit this season. Kunya says, you don't have to be a passer to be press resistant. Well, mate, I'd love to know how you can be press resistant without passing the ball. Because being press resistant is having the ball and not losing the ball. I mean, that's literally what it is. And if you want to talk about, well, maybe he dribbles. Dribbles per 90 from Belaba, 0.8. Dribbles per 90 from Ugarte, 0.8. Progressive runs per 90, which is when you get the ball and run with it. Belaba, 1.1. Ugarte, 1.2. So how the fuck is he press resistant if Ugarte dribbles more than him, moves the ball more than him, passes way more than him, tackles more than him? How the fuck can you be press resistant if you are less than Ugarte on every single thing? Press resistant to me is somebody who gets the ball, Rodri, doesn't lose the ball, passes the ball, keeps the ball, you know. So, look, I challenge that article around Belaba as pure bullshit if they're trying to sell him. I mean, look, some people don't analyse football. They would read that article and go, Belaba sounds brilliant statistically. He's press resistant. He's a defensive midfielder. He conducts the play. He doesn't. He just doesn't, is my opinion. Anyway, moving on. Let's talk about who else that they've got mentioned in this. So Fernandes of West Ham is mentioned. I don't want to analyse Fernandes much because we've spoken about him a lot yesterday. They liken him to Vitinha at PSG, evoking comparisons to his diminutive frame and technical quality, able to influence the tempo of a game when they're given the opportunity. Some people may, you know, balk at the fact that he's been relegated, but ultimately, I think with Fernandes, I like this signing. I do like the idea of Fernandes from West Ham. I think the big problem is it mentions Vitinha, and it's funny because PSG are looking at him. And so are Arsenal. So the problem with Fernandes, and Savage says it's not going to happen, the problem with Fernandes is that we have a situation whereby there are two big clubs looking at him in Arsenal and PSG, and that's going to inflate his price as well, certainly. I haven't really got anything to say on Fernandes. I don't mind the sign. I mean, look, he can't be I think what people need to get their head around here is it's almost like walking into a sweet shop. If you don't like sweets, exit the conversation. It's almost like walking into a sweet shop and there's so many sweets and you're like, I'm definitely going to get sweets. I just don't know which one I want. Remember, if you don't pick the right sweets, you might end up with some bad sweets. And that's the worst analogy I've ever done. But what I mean is there's a lot of choice. And I think some people are going, there's so much choice, we can't lose. You can. You definitely can lose. The shop can shut. You might not have enough money in your pocket for the sweets that you want. So there might be a load of choice there. There's definitely a lot of choice in the midfield shop. But have we got the money? And how long are we going to take to make our mind up? Because we're definitely in the shop, in the midfield shop, and there are a lot of options. But how much money have we got in our pocket? And how long are we going to take to actually decide what we want to do? Because I think that the big thing for me is going to be we have to sign a Casemiro replacement, and that has to be as close to world-class as possible. You can't replace Casemiro with Fernandes or Alex Scott or Belaba. With all due respect to those players, they might be really good in the future, but they cannot be the Casemiro replacement. There has to be a top-tier Casemiro replacement. Now, in relation to Scott, he is mentioned in the article as well. I like him. I think that I don't need to read the tactical data Dean bollocks anymore because I don't trust it. I think the analysis of Belaba is piss poor in that article, to be honest with you. So I'm just going to go through the names and give you my thoughts on them. In relation to Alex Scott, he is somebody that I think is probably relatively press resistant in the sense that he's got a good pass, but he also likes to take people on and he's very physical. And I think he'd be a good acquisition for Manchester United. In fairness, it does say in the article, Man United need to understand what the price is going to be for Alex Scott, which I think is very, very true because price is going to be very key here. You know, Fernandes at West Ham is an interesting player, but if they want 60, 70 million pounds, that probably becomes less interesting for Man United. Belaba is an interesting player at 50 million pounds, but if Brighton wants 60 or 70, somebody said the other day, 60 million for Belaba is not a bad deal. It's a fucking horrific deal. On what planet is he worth 60 million pounds? Oh, they wanted 100 million for him last summer. Well, that was a wrong valuation. I'm sorry, you know, if I have a car that's worth £10,000 and I put it on the market for £50,000, I can put it on the market for £50,000, but it's not worth £50,000. Brighton, whether we thought it was right or not, and look, there was a lot of people, myself included, saying give him 80 plus adults because I was desperate for a midfielder last summer. But the good thing that we didn't give that money to them is that we've had a year to understand what Belaba is. I think last season, after a decent season, it felt like he could be the next Caicedo. It felt like he could be the next big thing. We didn't pay the money. We've had a year, and he clearly isn't that. They've overpriced and overvalued Belaba. So £60 million for what? What are you paying £60 million for? Do you realise that we paid £60 million for Cunha? You do realise that Chelsea paid less than £60 million for João Pedro? What the fuck are you giving Brighton £60 million for Belaba for? And to anybody who says that we should give £60 million to Belaba, for Belaba to Brighton, think about what £60 million got you last year. Garnacho went to Chelsea for £40 million. Now, that looks like a good deal now, but Garnacho's did a lot more in his career a year ago than what Belaba's done, and he went for £40 million as an attacker. So £60 million for Belaba is not a good deal. On what planet is he worth £60 million? What comparable £60 million player does he stand up to? He's 50 million tops. So just be wary of United going, oh, we got Belaba for £60 million, and put it in your head and go, but why is he worth £60 million? Yes, Brighton valued him at £100 million, but that was massively overpriced. Look at the season he's had. Look at the career he's had. Look at, you know, the market. He is not even worth 60. He is a £50 million player. Scott, therefore, has to be around £50 million. I think Scott over £50 million is too much money. I think Edison's going to go for about 40. So price does come into it a lot. I think price becomes very, very important for everybody that we're looking at. Because, of course, the better price we get, the more midfielders we buy. If we can get a midfielder for 40 or 50, that means you've still got another 100, 110 to spend on two other players. So price is big, very, very, very important here. Double D says, building a team around Mainoo is crazy. You work for your place in a team. Just because Mainoo is English does not give him a right to start. Be a big admirer of Scott. The guy just screams quality. Somebody in the chat said, well, look, you're defending the fact that we're going to build a midfield around Mainoo. Do you think he's good enough? I like the idea of building a team around Mainoo. I have to say, I do like that idea. This is what Man United should be all about. He's a youth player. He's only 20. He's going to go to the World Cup. He's played for England before. We've just given him a new contract. There's no point in giving Mainoo a new contract and bringing him back into the team and then saying he's not an established player. In Bruno Fernandes, though, and he certainly isn't Casemiro, I would say that Mainoo's place in that team for next season is there. But you absolutely need to challenge him. He's not Declan Rice. He's not Rodri. His place is not irreplaceable. You know, he wasn't in the team this season because of Amrin, but last season he didn't have a good season either. So Mainoo's had ups and downs for a young player. If he can kick on and be the player we need him to be game in, game out, then for me, he plays every single game. But you do need composition for places, absolutely. And look, I'm not going to sit here and guarantee you that Mainoo's going to be the next Paul Scholes. You know, he might not be. He might end up being the next, I don't know, Kevin Phillips. You know, he might not end up being that good. But I feel like, you know, there's nothing wrong with wanting to build a midfield with Mainoo. But what you need to do is, I think people are getting hung up on it. They think Mainoo's going to play every week, even if he plays shit. You play Mainoo and you sign Anderson. It's Mainoo and Anderson. But then you have Scott and Adams on the bench to fight with them. And if Mainoo plays badly, Scott takes his place. That's how it works. Darshan says, this is not the Man United I support. I'm getting mediocre supporting this team as it's making me lower the bar. We say we, but how much we is there, says Darshan. Do you think that United are as broke as Barcelona, says VX? Anderson equals red Italian sports car. We buy red Fiat 500, says Marcus. Listing percentages, what is the value of 1%, says Keel Robinson. Mark, you say Anderson is a Casemiro replacement. He's not a six either. It won't work with Mainoo as they are both the same player. Tyrant, we literally played Forest at the weekend. What about Elliot Anderson makes you think he's the same player as Mainoo? They were literally on the same pitch for 90 minutes and they both played well and they're really different. Elliot Anderson drops in between the centre-backs and he's up and down the pitch energetically. Mainoo is a very different player to Anderson. A couple of months ago, I might have agreed with you, but I think we saw on Sunday there is a different side to Anderson's game. Vitinha, Valverde, Bruno is what we need, says SXE. When you've woken up, get in the real world. Is Belabor any different to Ugarte? Rory, that was the comment of the day. Mark, we're going to end up getting this window wrong, fail next season, sack Carrick and end up back to square one, and then no full centre-backs, says Lorcan. Mate, the scrutiny is on the board. If they get this window wrong, we will be where Newcastle are now, out of Europe completely and in the shit. In need of a new ownership and a new build and everything. So, look, they're taking a huge, huge risk here. Michael Carrick's not even officially the manager at the moment. I got told something in the middle of last week that, you know, I never really mentioned it because it's just a throwaway comment from a journalist, but it wasn't based on any evidence. But what I got told last week is that what you've got to remember is a lot of managers, whether they were approached or not, would turn the United job down. And I said, well, what do you mean? And they said, but look, if United don't go out and buy best in class this summer because they haven't got the ability to do it, why would a Luis Enrique or a Emery or a Tuchel want this? Why did Tuchel say no to Man United, basically? Why did he sign a new contract with England? Why did he stick to international football over one of the biggest jobs in football? And we were having this conversation and they said, in reality, we don't know the reality, but if you're a top class manager, you may be very, very, very excited by the prospect of managing Manchester United. But when you lift the bonnet, it's like lifting the bonnet on a Formula One car that looks like it's the best. And you lift the bonnet and there's birds hatching in there, you know, half the engine's broke, you know, and you go, I can't drive that car. It's my dream car, but I can't drive the car. And essentially, if you lift the bonnet up on Man United and you go, bloody hell, Jason Wilcox is the director of football. They have no ambition. They want you to work with the squad that they've got. They're not going to give you the players they want. They're not going to give you the control. And they're going to throw you under the bus completely when it goes wrong. I love the idea of the club, but the reality is just a bloody walking disaster. No thanks, I'm not going to do it. So, you know, you've got to remember that we don't know what the plan is for the club. And some managers maybe wouldn't take this job because of that. Look, as I said last night, Jose Mourinho finished second in the league, got 81 points, which is something we've never done since Sir Alex Ferguson. Asked for more players, didn't get them, and they sacked him 4 months later. And I'll tell you what, at Christmas, when we sacked Mourinho 4 months after finishing second with 81 points, nobody was saying, get the board out, they've absolutely screwed him over. They were saying, Jose out, Ollie in. So you take full blame as Man United manager, even though it's not your fault most of the time. So we don't know what their strategy is going to be. 47 months and counting, says Owen. I appreciate you, my friend. From that night in Paris to the transfer saga of Bruno and to now, great things and all the best. SXC says, Mainu, Vitinha and Bruno is a world-class media. He's still typing in his sleep. Having a laugh has gifted a membership. Thank you, sir. Daniel Thompson says, hi, Mark. Hope all is well on the United stand. Data is useful, but it's the eye test that's most key. And quality beats data every time. We need quality experience. A squad as Mainu can't play every game. Go all out and get top quality. And also, if the data is wrong, it's scary. I mean, the description of Belaba, I don't think he's a bad player, but he's not how they've described him. And, you know, we just ran data to compare Ugarte to Belaba, and Ugarte beats Belaba on everything. Tackling, passing, forward passing, pass accuracy, defensive actions, ball recoveries. So, you know, you can profile Belaba as the next, you know, best defensive midfielder in the world. I've just profiled him as worse than Ugarte at everything. It's the eye test, you're right. Having a laugh's gifted a membership. Liam says, reality check for you. Arsenal have just won the Premier League the first time in 22 years. Man United have waited 13 years for a league title. Owners need to wake up. Liam, here's a question to the chat, and there is no answer. All yesterday, I was thinking, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing that Man United are now the club the longest without a Premier League title amongst Arsenal, Liverpool, Chelsea and Man City. We are the embarrassment. We know we're the embarrassment, but it's now factual. And I was thinking yesterday, all I was thinking yesterday was it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing how far we have fallen. You know, I think over the years, we've always been, even in the early years after Sir Alex with the likes of Moyes and Van Gaal, you could go, well, Liverpool haven't won a title in the Premier League era. And then they go and do it. And you go, well, Arsenal, they're still Arsenal. They're the bottle jobs. But they're not now. We are the bottle jobs. We are the laughing stock. We are the club out of the top five that hasn't won a title the longest, right? And we may have won it the most, but Preston North End won a lot of trophies at one time in their history. Where are they now? So look, I think with United yesterday, it's just embarrassing. And I'm sure like me, a lot of you were thinking, how long till we win a title? How do we win a title? It needs to be an obsession. The standard has to be to win a title because you could finish second for the next 20 years. Still haven't won a title for 33 years. So I think you've got to look at it in that sense. But I do wonder, and I pose the question, did anybody at Man United yesterday go, this is not acceptable, it's embarrassing, we've got to win a league title? You know, who's Jason Wilcox? He's not a bloody Man United fan, is he? Won the league with Blackburn, played for Leeds, worked at Man City. Is he obsessed with Man United winning a league title? Omar Berada, he was taking the piss out of us on Twitter 10 years ago. He was Man City's COO. Is he going to be obsessed about Man United winning a title? Sir Jim Ratcliffe, lifelong Man United fan. Is he going to be obsessed with Man United winning a title? He used to have a bloody season ticket at Chelsea. The Glazers, I still don't think they know what football is. And this is the problem. Everybody in power at Man United aren't Man United fans. They're in it for a different reason. It's a business transaction. It's a payday. It's a wage slip. We need people in that football club who are obsessed every minute of every working day with winning a Premier League title. I don't think we have those people. I think those people are you. I don't think there's anybody at Man United who's got a say that is obsessed with winning, because you can't buy that. There is no job description that says, as part of this job, you must be obsessed with Man United winning a title. Being embarrassed about the fact that we haven't won a title for many years only comes from people who feel that embarrassment. Being obsessed with winning a Premier League title only comes from those people who are obsessed with that football club. We've got a bunch of pen pushers at United. We've got a bunch of bankers at Man United. We've got a bunch of paid employees at Man United. We need to be obsessed with winning a league title, because when you're obsessed, you don't look at data and go, yeah, Belabor's press resistance. Fernandez is the next Vitinha potentially. Alex Scott could be the English Rodri. You know, you don't look at data when you're obsessed with success. You use your head. You use your passion. You use your experience. Data can't tell you what a Man United player is. Data can tell you that, you know, it's Moneyball, isn't it? Brilliant film. Data can tell you that Hayden Hackney at Middlesbrough hits a lot of targets and could be a really good player. I don't want could be from the Championship. I want will be at Old Trafford. And that, so you can shove your data up your fucking arse. Because data doesn't ever tell you whether they're a Man United player. Because taking your data-driven player from France and sticking them in a Brighton shirt is very different to taking your data from France and sticking them in a Man United shirt in front of 75,000 people with constant scrutiny. So,
want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
I worry about United because I think we are too analytical, computer-led, emotionless. There is some... Everybody I've ever spoken to, whether it's people like Paul Ince or Gary Neville or, you know, every other player, everybody I've ever spoken to about Man United, they all have this running... They all say the same thing. And I bet Roy Keane would say it. And I bet David Beckham would say it. And I bet Rio Ferdinand would say it. And I bet they'd all say it. There is one thing. And I've heard Rooney saying it as well. There's one thing they always say. And I think you all know what I'm going to say. And I think you know it as well. They're not a United player. They signed him. They're not a United player. You don't get that on Y Scout. You don't get that from data. Being a Man United player... It's like, look at Zaha, very good player at Palace, comes to Man United, not a Man United player. Look at Sancho, very, very good player at Dortmund, comes to Man United, not a Man United player. Look at Alexis Sanchez, very good player at Arsenal, comes to Man United, not a Man United player. And the list goes on and on and on and on. You buy Ander Herrera, Man United player. You buy Lisandro Martinez, Man United player. It's not actually about your data, and it's not actually about the price, and it's not actually about the talent. It's about something here. Data's never going to give you that. You know, I look at Belabor and I look at the season he's had and I go, I don't think you're a Man United player. Look at how many games he's bottled, you know? I look at Fernandez at West Ham and I go, you know what? What he's been through at West Ham as a debut season, he might be a Man United player. He might be a Man United player. I look at Tyler Adams at Bournemouth and I go, with the injury problems he's had, I'm not convinced he's going to be consistent enough to be a Man United player, because that's another thing as well. You've got to be fit. Mason Mount, not a Man United player. And it's not, Mason Mount's not a Man United player, not because of his mentality or his ability or his personality. It's because of his availability. All these things matter. And I just don't think we have anybody in that boardroom that knows what a Man United player is. And hopefully Michael Carrick can bring that. Hopefully he can. Does delay in announcing Carrick show that the club don't truly believe he's the right guy? Thought it would have been straight away if they did, surely, says Daniel. Look, in relation to Michael Carrick, he is not expected to be announced as Man United's manager today, which means it's a week after when he was meant to be announced that he still isn't the manager. It was meant to be last Friday. It was expected to be last Friday. When it didn't happen last Friday, it was bloody expected to be before the game against Forest at Old Trafford when he did his speech. The fact that it's not going to be today, which takes it to Friday, I think the reason that it's not been done is because there is still some negotiation taking place on his contract. Now, that means there is some debate going on, because if it was like, that's the salary, that's the release clause, that's your involvement, that's your staff, that's your company car, it's all tick, 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 let's sign the contract. So somewhere along the line, there is back and forth going on. As Malp says, it's a joke that it hasn't been signed. Well, it is a joke that it hasn't been signed, because it's hardly a verification of support for Carrick when you're going back and forth on God knows what. I mean, for all we know, Carrick might just be saying, you know, I want the parking space near to my office at Carrington. And the club might be saying, we can't give you that spot. It's Jason's. Can we put you there? And Carrick's like, well, can't I just go? You don't know what it is. I mean, bloody contracts. We've all seen contracts, whether it's car contracts, finance, whatever. There'll be some things or something in there that they're going back and forth on. But it's not that deep. He will be Man United manager. Like, there is no chance he's not going to be the manager, because there is no other job for Carrick. And certainly there's no other job that's Man United. He wants this job. And Man United can't get anybody else now. So it will be Carrick. This is who they've chosen. The real issue is, why are we so slow? Why are we so slow? Everything we do, we're slow on. You know, Cunha did take 2 months. It was in mid-April that Romano was ready to announce that. It didn't happen until, was it May, June? I can't remember. And Mbeumo, I was on a flight to New York first week of June. Didn't sign till the middle of July. So, you know, we take ages on everything. Absolutely. Rekha says, I've got a bad feeling we're going to end up with Scott, Hackney and Belabor. Look, the article with Laurie Whitwell in The Athletic does mention Hayden Hackney. It also mentions this Charles lad from Southampton. Absolutely nothing against these two players, but what I'm going to say is, I do not, and you can disagree with me, ultimately this is what it's all about. In respect to Charles at Southampton and Hackney at Middlesbrough, I know Hackney is a player that Carrick knows. I respect that, but I do not think for one second that taking a punt on Championship midfielders as one of our three midfielders this summer is a good idea. You're basically buying me two midfielders then, aren't you? And a punt. We need three midfielders. We have Mainoo and we need three midfielders, don't we? So if you get me Mainoo and Hayden Hackney and two midfielders, you're basically getting me three midfielders, because we don't know what Hayden Hackney's going to do. We don't. He might be brilliant. He might be shit. And if he's shit, the excuse is, well, he's only played in the Championship. That is not... I'm not saying Man United aren't going to do it, because they might well do it. But what I am saying is, that to me should not be one of the three midfielders that Man United are signing. There is a cult in this fan base that's been going on about Hayden Hackney for about 2 years. And in that 2 years, he still plays for Middlesbrough. Why aren't Liverpool or Everton or anybody else going for Hayden Hackney? Is it because Michael Carrick used to have him at Middlesbrough? Look, what I would say about Hayden Hackney is, I will laugh myself off this chair if we sign Hayden Hackney, because I will say this. When Ten Hag was signing Martinez and Antony, there was certain journalists who took the piss out of him for buying players from Ajax. When there was talk of Amorim buying people from Sporting, there was people going, you can't be letting him buy people from Sporting. But if Michael Carrick buys Hayden Hackney from the Championship because he managed them in Middlesbrough, you know, I hope those journalists have got the same thing going on. But they won't. They won't. Look, Daniel Thompson says Hackney's good, but he's not what we need. I haven't seen enough of Middlesbrough to know how good he is, but he plays in the Championship. He plays in the Championship. It's too much of a punt for me. You know, Liam Delap was very good in the Championship. For me, this summer is not about buying people like Hayden Hackney. It's not about buying Matt Smith guy from the Netherlands. We don't need prospects. We don't need projects. We need three midfielders that come in and we go Champions League, Premier League. People need to get that in their head. Premier League, top four, and Champions League is what we've got to do next season. We can't go into next season with a project coach and a project midfield. Because if it all goes wrong at Christmas, I hope you're there going, well, I wanted the project. I wanted this project. I said give it to Carrick and I said let's get Hayden Hackney. Don't be fucking doing that because you won't be doing it. You will all be there going, Carrick out. Why did we buy that bag of shit from the Championship? So I'm just giving you a little bit of a guider here. So anyone going, yeah, let's give the job to Carrick and let's give it to some prospect midfield, you'll be losing your shit with them if it goes wrong. What we need to do is get three midfielders that can play now. Three midfielders that can play now. So Champions League football and trying to get in the top three again. So you've got Mainu, you get Anderson, Tenali, Chermini, Scott, Belaba, Fernandez. At least they're all Premier League players and at least they're all players that different variants of this fan base think are good enough for Man United. You can't be taking punts. We can't be taking punts. If you're Arsenal, you sign Hayden Hackney. If you're Man City, you know, maybe you sign Hayden Hackney because you don't necessarily need to start them at all until Christmas. You bring them in the summer, you get them training with the likes of Declan Rice and Rodri, you give them a Carabao Cup game, you give them 20 minutes when you're winning 3-0 and you gradually build them into the team. I ain't got a problem with signing Hayden Hackney if I'm in that situation, but the situation we're in, mate, you need to start away against Arsenal and you're starting against Bayern Munich on Wednesday. Fucking hell, you know? So this is what I mean. There's nothing wrong with buying a Hayden Hackney, but for us, it's just not the right circumstances. Look at Morgan Rodgers last night. A goal and an assist. And what an assist for Tielemans. And a good goal as well. And I was doing a watch-along on That's Football, and people were saying, oh, Morgan Rodgers to Man United. And I was like, he's a good player. Morgan Rodgers is a good player. There is absolutely no doubt about that. He's a very, very good player. But do we need to spend £80 million on Morgan Rodgers? Do we need a player who was brilliant last night as a number 10 playing out of position on the left wing for £80 million? And the honest answer is no, we don't. We need a left winger, we need a left back, and we need three midfielders. What about Emery to United? I mean, Aston Villa play good football. He builds teams. What he's done to Villa in the years he's been there is put them in the Champions League twice. He's won the Europa League, so that's three seasons. They've had 2 years in the Champions League. In the Europa League, they've won it. They've been consistently in the top six, and they do play good football. And he's worked to a budget. I mean, Unai Emery is an incredible manager. As I understand it, and I do know people quite close to Villa, which is why I think we'll go for Morgan Rodgers. As I understand it, the inquiry that Man United made with Emery could never have been United deciding they don't want Unai Emery because they couldn't get Emery without paying a release clause to Villa. And also, Emery's freedom of control at Villa would be 10 times what he'd get at United. So this whole United approach to Emery doesn't make... People at Villa don't even understand what that would mean. Because there was never any conversation about a release clause or anything like that. So, I don't know. Look, Man United were never going to pay for a manager, were they? If we get Rodgers, it's like having two Brunos, says JSD. Look, if Bruno was leaving, Rodgers would be a good signing. Are you having a ballroom built, says Malpa? I can't dance. Cyan says, do you think Cunha starts if we buy a world-class winger? I think we need a world-class winger as Man United's style of counter-attacks or a 4-3-3 with Cunha in midfield is possible with a Tchouaméni. Cunha is our best ball carrier. I think we've misprofiled Cunha and Mbeumo so far. I worry about them in this system because if we're not going to use Mbeumo as a right winger, where does he play? And where does Cunha play? Because he shouldn't be playing on the wing. You're absolutely correct. In the system that Carrick plays, he'd be better off with a really quick winger. Rashford of 5 years ago would have been perfect in this system. Kvaratskhelia would be perfect in this system. Luis Diaz would be perfect in this system. Cunha is not that type of player. Cunha is better in the number 10, but Bruno's going to play in the number 10. So I don't know what we're going to do with Cunha. I feel like he's at a football club without a position. He will play a lot of games, but he might have to play a lot of games out of position. Good morning, Mark. So Jim sacks the workforce that was obsessed with winning the league and genuinely lived the values of our once great club, says Andre. Do you think, done that one, that was the point I was trying to make about stats, says Robert McCormack. Thank you very much. Too many ex-City people at United. Trojan horse sabotage, says Damien. And is Wilcox for the sack if the window flops, says Liam. I think in January, I was told that there was some scrutiny around Wilcox. It looks like since then they've doubled down. I think he's untouchable. Rightly or wrongly, I think he's untouchable at United. I see Belabor being another Sancho, says Ready Meals. And Keel says to people in the chat, if you only attempt one tackle in the whole season and it's successful, then you have 100% success rate. Beware of percentages, says Keel. Would you rather Elliot Anderson and a 50 million midfielder or three midfielders, says Ben. But I shouldn't have to choose that because what you're basically saying is United is an unambitious football club and has a low budget. So I can't answer the question, Ben, because I will not justify signing two midfielders when we need to buy three and we need to buy a quality replacement. So it's Elliot Anderson and two midfielders. It's Tonali and it's two midfielders. It's Tchouaméni and two midfielders. There is no one of them and one midfielder. We have to get three. Rajaf says, Ineos's incompetence is mind-boggling. How can you be behind a club who are going to make a monumental change in Maresca and Carrick is here since January? Yeah. Well, look, we were talking about that last night. Apparently, Maresca and Man City have been working on transfer targets for weeks. Carrick's been here since January. We still haven't announced him and we're not working on targets. Slow! Patrick Lynch is in the house. Issue with Mainu as the focal point is in his United career, he's already had two very lengthy injuries. Any midfield build means we need players with the lowest drop-off in quality because injuries do occur. Jay says, G'day, Mark. It pisses me off that United are this incompetent. We're Man United. Look from Australia. And Pete Phillips says, Stiller is valued around 50 million too, so bin belabor off, says Pete. Look, it would never happen, and I'm talking complete arse here, but there are other people you could get to do this. You could get Roy Keane to do it, you know? You know, there are people you could get to do it. And I wouldn't need to be paid to do it. I'd love to just be in the boardroom for these meetings and have one role. It's great that you're talking about Belabor. It's great that you're talking about Anderson. It's great that you're talking about a new stadium. It's great that you're talking about sustainability. It's great that you're talking about service the deck. But can I repeat the thing that needs to be at the start of every one of these meetings? We're Manchester United. It's embarrassing where we are as a football club. We haven't won a league title for 13 years. Out of the top five clubs in England, we've got the longest wait without a title. We have to be obsessed with winning a league title today. Not tomorrow, not in 5 years' time, today. Because even if we're obsessed with winning the league today, it's going to take 2 to 5 years to do it. If you're planning to win a title in 3 years, it's going to take 10. Because you're planning to do something in 3 years that from the day that you actually start doing it will take 3 years. We have to be obsessed with winning the league today. We have to believe we can win the league today. We have to make the changes to win the league today because it will take 2 to 5 years to do it anyway. And if you plan to do it in 3 years' time, it's going to take 2 to 5 years to do it because until the day we start being obsessed with winning the league every fucking day, we're not going to get near winning the league. You can't tell me in this boardroom that you're obsessed with winning the league when you won't solve the fullback problems this summer. And I'll guarantee you, last summer in this boardroom, you were talking about winning league titles, but you didn't solve the midfield problem. And if I'd been in the boardroom last summer, I would have said, don't talk to me about winning league titles when you're not solving the midfield. Because I would have said to you, we are not talking about the league table if you're or a title if you're not buying midfielders, because there is no league title if you don't buy midfielders. So we've got to be obsessed with winning today. We get the fullbacks, we get the midfielders, we get everything we need this summer. And from that point, then we can figure out when we're going to win the league. But we're not talking about the league until you start solving the problems. And we have to be obsessed with that issue every single day. I want to know why what this team needs today to be a serious contender for the title tomorrow. Well, we're not going to solve those problems. We're going to paper the cracks. We're going to spin a little bit here. Manchester United, if I'm in that boardroom, I'm like, we clearly need three midfielders and two fullbacks this summer. And we clearly need a backup striker and we clearly need a left winger. That is six players we need today. If you say to me we're only buying three of them, we're not serious. We're not serious. We can't talk about league titles if we're not going to solve the problems in the team today. You can't be a title winner if you don't solve the problems today. Because I guarantee you what, we'll solve these problems today and tomorrow there'll be a new problem that we need to solve. We have to solve the problems today. We have to be obsessed today. I don't think anybody in that boardroom is serious about it. If we get Rodgers, it's like having two new Brunos, says JSD. Thank you very much. Have I spoken to you about every single midfielder that was updated? Edison. I didn't speak to you about Edison, did I? Sorry. And he is in the title. So what was the update on Edison, Mark? Well, this is the update in The Athletic. United held talks about Baleba last summer with personal terms not a problem. And although his forms... No, that's Baleba, sorry. Why am I reading Baleba as Edison? There is an update on Edison. Edison is a player that United have tracked since last summer, and he presents an option at the lower end of the cost scale, potentially £40 million due to his contract expiring in 2027. They're aware of what his personal terms would look like as well. Edison is the sort of player managers adore, patrolling the pitch between both boxers. He might not always get the headlines, but he's a crucial cog in the wider team dynamic that allows others around him to play at full tilt. I think with Edison, right, and I'll keep saying this, I've always been a fan of Edison. We've been linked to Edison for about 4 years. I mean, we've done so many videos on Edison. And I think that the thing I would say about Edison is that if he's coming in as midfielder three or midfielder two, there isn't necessarily a massive issue with that. I don't think. So Edison coming in as that, what some of you like to define as bench option, what I would define as competition, I don't mind Edison. As Eccles said, he's fine for third choice. I mean, look, there's the shelf behind me. If you get Anderson, you get Scott, and you get Edison, happy days. I'd be very happy with those three because Edison's an outlier, isn't he? He's like, what can he do? If that third midfielder is someone like Edison, it's very exciting because you go, he's an interesting profile of player. He's only cost us £40 million. He's very experienced. He could come in and be really useful to us. So can you do Edison versus Ugarte? I'll tell you what, you're getting bonus content here for free on YouTube. Let me put in Edison here. We could just do a whole show doing this for hours. Edison at Atalanta. Where are you? Oh, it's going to fucking take ages to find him, isn't it? There he is. Didn't take long at all. Right, Edison. Current season. Compare mode. Relevant on position. Okay, why is it doing that? Let's do passes first. So Edison's passes per 90, 49. Ugarte, 47. Baleba, 35. Accurate passes, 89%. Ugarte, 86. Baleba, 85. Forward passes per 90, 14.5 to Agate's 13 to Baleba's 9.
So he's better at passing than those two. Defensively, successful defensive actions, 8. Baleba, 8.4. And Ugarte, 11.8. Progressive runs, we want to look at as well. He's definitely a better passer. Defensively, he's about the same as Baleba. Progressive runs per 90, 1.7. To Baleba's 1.1 and Agate's 1.2. Dribbles per 90, 1.2. To Baleba's 0.8 and Agate's 0.8. So yeah, he's better on the ball. He's better with the ball. And his defensive stuff is okay. There you go. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. We're back with the 8 o'clock show tonight. Last couple of nights, it's been 7 o'clock because of Premier League and Europa League. We're back in the 8 o'clock slot tonight. 2 o'clock today. Ben Jacobs is actually tomorrow. I can't remember what he's not doing today. I feel like he's doing something today. Ben Jacobs is tomorrow. Thank you very much. When's the Brighton preview? He's got really good long-range passing, and Edison, apparently. Well, I'll tell you what, I can do that for you. Long passes per 90, 3.2. Baleba, 3.8. Agate, 2.4. Accurate long passes, 55%. Baleba, 50%. Agate, 31%. So Baleba does slightly more long passes, but Edison is more accurate. And I don't want long passes, to be honest. We've got Bruno for that. I don't want another midfielder hitting long diagonals. And we've got Maguire for that. I don't want us going long ball, to be honest. When are you doing the Brighton preview? I don't know. I've got to be honest. I've lost a lot of interest. I'm looking forward to the game, but I'll be glad when it's over. At least we're not doing... Remember that horrific... Oh, God. What a 12 months it's been. Remember when we lost the Europa League final last year and went on that tour for 2 games? Oh, God, that was horrific. I'll be glad when the Brighton game's done. I want to get on with transfers now. Simon says, Anderson, 100 million. Fernandes, 30 million. Edison, 40 million. What am I missing? Well, you've mispriced Fernandes, mate. You do know that West Ham paid 40 for him a year ago. They won't be selling him for 10 million undervalue. They'll be selling him for at least 10 million overvalue. I think Fernandes is going to cost about 60 million. So Anderson, Fernandes and Edison would be 200 million. Yeah. Beckham played long ball, says Stephen. Yeah, David Beckham was a winger, mate. Speak to you later. Enough of the internet for today. Take care, everyone. Stay safe. Have a great day.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.